I told some of you last Thursday of the principles of the time machine and showed you the actual thing itself, incomplete in the workshop. There it is now, a little travel-worn, truly, and one of the ivory bars is cracked and the brass rail bent, but the rest is, it is sound enough. I expect to finish it on Friday, but on Friday, when putting it together and was nearly done, I found that one of the nickel bars was exactly 1 inch too short, and this I had to get remade, so the thing was not complete until this morning. It was at 10 o'clock today that the first of all time machines began its career. I gave it a last tap, tightened all the screws again, put one more drop of oil on the quartz rod, and sat myself in the saddle. I suppose a suicide who holds a pistol to his skull feels much the same wonder at what will come next as I felt then. I took the starting rod in one hand and the stopping in the other, pressed the first and almost immediately the second. I seemed to reel. I felt a nightmare sensation of falling, and looking around I saw the laboratory exactly as before. Had anything happened? For a moment I suspected that my intellect had tricked me. Then I took note of the clock. A moment before, as it seemed, it stood at a minute or so past 10. Now it was nearly 3:30. I drew a breath, set my teeth, gripped the starting lever with both hands, and went off with a thud. The laboratory grew hazy and went dark. This watchet came in and walked, apparently without seeing me, towards the garden door. I suppose it took her a minute or so to traverse the place, but to me she seemed to shoot across the room like a rocket. I pressed the lever over to its extreme position. The night came like the turning out of a lamp. In another moment came tomorrow. The laboratory grew faint and hazy, then fainter and fainter still. The morning night came black. Then day again, night again, day again, faster and faster still. An eating murmur filled my ears, and strange, dumb confusedness descended upon my mind. I am afraid I cannot convey the peculiar sensations of time traveling. They are excessively unpleasant. There is also a feeling exactly like one has upon a switchback, of a helpless, headlong motion. I felt the same horrible anticipation, too, of an imminent smash. As I put on pace, night followed day like the flapping of a black wing. The dim suggestion of the laboratory seemed presently to fall away from me, and I saw the sun hopping swiftly across the sky, leaping it every minute, and every minute marking a day. I suppose the laboratory had been destroyed, and I had come to be in the open air, so I had a dim impression of scaffolding, but I was already going too fast to be conscious of any moving things. The slowest snail that ever crossed dashed by too fast for me. The twinkling succession of night and day was excessively painful to the eye. Then, in intermittent darkness, I saw the moon spinning slightly through her quarters, from new to full, and had a faint glimpse of circling stars. Presently, as I went on, still gaining velocity, the palpitation of night and day merged into one continuous grayness. The sky took on a wonderful deepness of blue, a splendid luminous color like early twilight. The jerking sun became a streak of fire, a brilliant arc in space. The moon, a fainter fluctuating band, and I could see nothing of the stars, save now and then a brighter circle flickering in the blue. The landscape was misty and vague, but I was still on the hillside upon which this house now stands, and one shoulder rose above me gray and dim, as I saw trees growing and changing like puffs of vapor, now brown, now green. They grew, spread, shivered, and passed away. I saw huge buildings rise up faint and fair, like the passing of dreams. The whole surface of the earth seemed changed, melting and flowing under my eyes. The little hands upon the dials that registered my speed registered faster and faster. Presently, I noted that the sun belt swayed up and down from solstice to solstice in a minute or less, and that consequently my pace was over a year a minute. And minute by minute, the white snow flashed across the world and vanished, and was followed by a brief green of spring. The unpleasant sensations of the start were less poignant now. They merged at last into a kind of a hysterical acceleration. I remarked, indeed, the clumsy swaying of the machine, for which I was unable to account, but my mind was too confused to attend to it, so with a kind of madness growing upon me, I flung myself into futurity. At first, I scarce thought of stopping, scarce thought of anything but these new sensations. But presently, a fresh series of impressions grew upon my mind, a certain curiosity, and therewith a certain dread, upon, at last they took complete possession of me. What strange developments of humanity, what wonderful advances upon our rudimentary civilization, I thought, might not appear when I come to look at the dim, elusive world that raced and fluctuated before my eyes. I saw great and splendid architecture rising above me, more massive than any buildings of our own time. And yet, as it seemed, built of glimmer and mist, I saw a richer green flowing up the hillside and remained there without any wintry intermission. Even though the veil of my confusion, the earth seemed very fair, and my mind came around to the business of stopping. A peculiar risk that lay the possibility of me finding some substance in space which I and my machine occupied, so as long as I traveled at high velocity through time, this scarcely mattered. I was, so to speak, attenuated, so slipping through like vapor through the interstices of intervening substances. But to come to stop involved the jamming of myself molecule by molecule into whatever lay in my way, might bring my atoms into such intimate contact with those of the obstacle that profound chemical reaction, or possibly a far-reaching explosion, result and blow myself and my apparatus out of all possible dimensions into the unknown. This possibility had occurred to me again and again while I was making the machine. But then, I cheerfully accepted it as an unavoidable risk, one of the risks that man has to take. Now this risk was inevitable. I was no longer there in the same cheerful light that falls insensibly, the absolute strangeness of everything, the sick, the jarring swaying of the machine. Above all, the feeling of prolonged falling had absolutely upset my nerve, and told me that I could never stop. With a gust of petulance, I resolved to stop forthwith. Like an impatient fool, I lugged over to the lever, and incontinently the thing went reeling over, and I was flung headlong through the air. There was the sound of a clap of thunder in my ears. I may have been stunned for a moment. A pitiless hail was hissing round me, and I was sitting on the soft turf in front of the overset machine. Everything seemed gray, but presently I remarked that the confusion in my ears was gone and looked around me at what seemed like a little lawn in the garden, surrounded by rhododendron bushes, and I noticed that their mauve and purple blossoms were dropping in a shower under the beating of hailstones. The rebounding, dancing hail hung in a cloud over the machine and drove all the ground like smoke. In a moment, I was wet to the skin. Fine hospitality, said I, to a man who has traveled innumerable years to see you. Presently, though I thought what a fool I was to get wet, I stood up and looked round me. A colossal figure, carved apparently in some white stone, loomed indistinctly behind the rhododendrons through the hazy downpour, but all else of the world was invisible. My sensations were hard to describe. As columns of hail grew thinner, I saw the white figure more distinctly. It was very large, for a white birch tree touched its shoulder, and it was made of white marble, in shape something like a winged sphinx. But the wings, instead of being carried vertically at the sides, were spread so they seemed to hover. The pedestal, it appeared to me, was of bronze, and was thick with verdigris. It chanced to the face toward me, the shiftless eyes seemed to watch me. There was the faint shadow of a smile on the lips. It was a greatly weather-worn, that imparted an unpleasant suggestion of disease. I stood looking for a little space, half a minute, perhaps half an hour. It seemed to advance and recede as the hail drove before, denser and thinner. At last, I tore my eyes from it for a moment and saw that the hail curtain had worn threadbare and the sky was lightening with the promise of the sun. I looked up again at the crouching white shape, and the full temerity of my boy suddenly came upon me. What appeared when the hazy curtain was altogether withdrawn? What might not happen to men? What if cruelty had grown into the common passion? What if in the interval the race had lost its manliness and developed into something inhuman, unsympathetic, and overwhelmingly powerful? It might seem some old-world savage animal, only the more dreadful and disgusting for our common likeness, a foul creature to be incontinently slain. Already I saw other vast shapes, huge buildings with intricate parapets and tall columns, with a wooded hillside deeply creeping in upon me through the lessening storm. I was seized with a panic fear. I turned frantically to the time machine and strove hard to readjust it. As I did, the shafts of the sun smote through the thunderstorm. The gray downpour was swept aside and vanished like the trailing garments of a ghost. Above me, in the intense blue of the summer sky, some faint brown shreds of cloud whirled into nothingness. The great buildings about me stood out clear and distinct, shining with the wet of the thunderstorm and picked out in white by unmelted hailstones piled along their courses. I felt naked in a strange world, perhaps as a tiny bird might feel in the clean air, knowing that the hawk wings were above and would swoop. My fear grew to a frenzy. I took a breathing space, set my teeth, and again grappled fiercely, wrist and knee, with my machine. It gave under my desperate onset and turned over, and I struck my shin violently on one side of the saddle and the other on the lever, and stood panting, heavy, in an attitude to mount again. But with this recovery of a prompt retreat, my courage recovered. I looked more curiously and less fearfully at this world of the remote future. In the circular opening, high in the wall of the nearer house, I saw a group of figures clad in soft, rich robes. They had seen me, and their faces were directed towards me. Then I heard voices approaching me, coming through the bushes by the white sphinx were heads and shoulders of men running. One of these emerged in a pathway leading straight to the little lawn in which I stood with my machine. He was a slight creature, perhaps 4 feet high, clad in a purple tunic, girdled about the waist with a leather belt. Sandals or bushkins, I could not clearly distinguish which, were on his feet. His legs were bare to the knees, and his head was bare. Noticing that, I reached for the first time and felt how warm the air was. He struck me as being a very beautiful and graceful creature, but indescribably frail. His flushed face reminded me of one of the more beautiful kind of consumptive, that hectic beauty of which we hear so much. The sight of him, I suddenly regained confidence and took my hands from the machine.